Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jazz gets a funeral dirge, but not everyone thinks it's time to sing the blues. Welcome to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and ahead today, jazz gets a wake-up call, and guitarist Smokey Hormel shares his new album inspired by African dance music of the 50s and 60s. When the National Endowment for the Arts released a study on arts participation a few weeks ago, it offered some troubling news about the size of jazz audiences, and while Terence Blanchard's funeral dirge in the background wasn't written after that report came out, it certainly seems appropriate when you look at some of the numbers. It showed that over a six-year period, the number of Americans attending jazz events dropped to a low of 7.8%, and as if that weren't bad enough, the audience is growing older, 17 years older since the 1982 version of the survey. Earlier this month, author and drama critic Terry Teachout amplified those points in an article for the Wall Street Journal entitled, "Can Jazz Be Saved?" Well, that was picked up by the websites and blogs, and a firestorm ensued. Terry Teachout joins us on the line today. Hi, Terry.
Hi, John. Good to hear from you again.
Good to talk to you, too. You say, though, that the future of jazz is bleak. Why are you having such a strong reaction to this survey, and then why do you think there's such a strong re-reaction to your article in the community?
Well, for me, the telling number, the most important one, is the median age number. The National Endowment for the Arts has taken four surveys of arts participation in the United States since 1982. In the first of those surveys, the median age of the people attending live jazz performances was 29. It was the lowest median age for any of the arts that was measured. It went up in every successive measurement until last year, when it reached 46 years of age. That puts the jazz audience in the same area as the audiences for opera, for ballet, for live classical music, for all of the so-called fine arts. It also means, given that 17-year leap, that the jazz audience is not replacing itself with young people. It's simply getting older. That, I think, is cause for considerable alarm.
So just looking at the raw numbers, the median age has gone up. In and of itself, perhaps not a bad thing, but the audience is also getting smaller, right?
Yeah, well, the audience is getting smaller. The age is getting larger. The key to the age number is that as people grow older and either die or stop attending jazz performances, live performances, they're not being replaced by younger people. If they were, the median age wouldn't have gone up 17 years in the last quarter century. Couple that with the drop in the absolute numbers, and you have a very disturbing scenario for the future of jazz, because if jazz is not, in fact, bringing in younger audiences, where are the audiences going to come from, since they're dropping in all age groups, not just young people?
Just to make a comparison, I mean, classical music has been wrestling with this problem for decades as well. People started talking around 1980, 82, about the graying of the audience. I can remember the head of the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra at a conference talking about how the average age of his audience was close to 50. But then he said, you know what, it's always been around 50. It's always going to be around 50. So you're talking about something different.
In 1982, jazz had the lowest median age of any of the arts that were measured by the National Endowment for the Arts. Now it has one that's comparable to these other numbers, and it's going up as the audience is going down. That means that it's shrinking in all possible metrics, and it's not replacing with young people. That is a problem. And just as classical music a decade and a half ago, who refused to grapple with this fact, they just wouldn't admit it, they pretended it wasn't true, they didn't want to think about it. I think a lot of the reaction in the blogosphere and from other people who have written about my piece represents either a failure to understand what the median age number means or a simple unwillingness to face its implications. And that's the same thing that happened with classical music. The difference is that jazz doesn't have the institutional structures that classical music has. It's basically made by individuals. And so I doubt if it has as long to pull with the audience development problem.
We're speaking with Terry Teachout, drama critic for the Wall Street Journal, and writes the About Last Night blog at artsjournal.com. And Terry is currently on the phone with us from a boat. He is on a cruise, taking a little time out.
I'm on the Atlantic coast. I'm in westerly Rhode Island on a much-needed vacation.
And that's why we're hearing a little bit of the wind sound there over the waves.
You're getting the ocean breeze.
Let me ask you one more thing. In 2002, this NEA Arts Participation Survey showed that 10.8% of Americans said they had been to a live jazz performance. In the 2008 survey, that had fallen 3%, from 10.8 to 7.8. So just in this decade, that's a substantial loss of people going to see live jazz. Why do you think that's happened?
In the last 6 years. Well, part of it, of course, as everybody who's written about these numbers is aware, is because in 2008, the survey was taken during the leading edge of the recession, and there was less money to throw around. But since all of the metrics have been pointing downward since 1982, it means that something more fundamental is going on. My guess, for what it's worth, and it is nothing more than a guess, is that the average American has come to see jazz as a fine art, as something more like classical music than like popular music. That would be in line with the fact that the jazz numbers are now, that median age number for jazz is the same as all the other fine arts. And I think that's partly because jazz is not a popular music anymore. I mean, some forms of jazz are more accessible than others, but generally speaking, jazz is a more complex, demanding music now than it was, say, in 1950 or maybe even 1960. So probably what I think we're probably seeing is a long-term erosion of the jazz audience and a decreased likelihood for younger people to embrace jazz as a music that they might take personal interest in. It doesn't mean that there aren't any young people listening to jazz. A lot of people who reacted to my piece said, well, I was in a club last week and I saw lots of young people, so that means your piece can't be right. But that's anecdotal evidence. The NEA surveys are based on a statistically representative sample of the complete American population that was taken by the U.S. Census Bureau. Those are real numbers, hard numbers, and they mean something more significant than simple anecdotal evidence.
They paint a fairly grim picture, as my guest Terry Teachout writes in his article, Can Jazz Be Saved? In the Wall Street Journal. The pianist and composer Vijay Iyer has been on Soundcheck a number of times in the past, and today joins us not behind the keyboard, but behind the microphone. And Vijay, as a young jazz consumer yourself, as a performer, how do you react to this series of numbers that Terry has quoted from?
Well, I looked over these numbers very carefully last night, and I guess I see some possibly different hypotheses to explain them. Thank you, Mr. Teachout, for your views and for really drawing attention to these numbers, which do give us all pause. I would like to point out something that's sort of maybe not been made clear about these numbers, which is that this is measuring the number of people who attended live jazz concerts, which is not equal to the jazz audience, okay? I mean, it's actually about how many people went to jazz concerts in between 2007 and 2008. That's what was measured in each of these four surveys.
So the difference being, there are millions of Britney Spears fans out there, but maybe not only, tens or 100,000 or so who've actually gone to see a Britney Spears concert.
Yeah, and actually this arts survey points to an overall decline in participation in the arts in general in the United States. And jazz is no exception to that trend. However, what I would like to point out is that this does not control for accessibility. I don't want to say accessibility. That's a different question. Access to jazz concerts. It presumes, actually, that the number of jazz concerts out there has stayed constant and interest in the music has declined. And that's actually not the case. As far as I can tell, from 1982 until now, actually, the number of opportunities to see live jazz has declined precipitously in that period.
You mean outside of major cities like New York?
Of course, outside of New York and perhaps Chicago and some other certain cities. But, you know, New York, these cities are exceptions. When you look across the country, and particularly at cities, because this is a city music, cities on the whole have declined in America since 1982. I mean, most of them have gone the way of Detroit or, heaven forbid, New Orleans, rather than kind of maintaining
thriving. In terms of population?
In terms of participation in the arts, in terms of culture, in terms of economic vigor, in terms of all these kinds of larger cultural measures of well-being.
You've raised a couple of points. Let me ask Terry to respond to the first of them. Terry, the idea that all these metrics, it's about people who've actually gone to see jazz. You know, what about the people who now have access to jazz through internet and satellite radio that never had it before? They will not appear in these numbers, will they?
No, these numbers are about live performance, but there, I see, frankly, no reason to think that jazz record sales are going up. By every indication I know of, they're going down. Satellite radio is an extremely small sliver of the listening audience. Now, the number of people who are accessing all forms of music through the new media is going up, but that's still a very small number. I mean, the numbers that I'm talking about are nationwide numbers. They're not about New York City. They're not about Chicago. They're about the nation as a whole and its adult population.
Yeah, and I would like there to be a clarity about how many opportunities there were to see jazz performances across America, not just in these major cities, but for everybody. And I would hypothesize that actually that number decreased over this period. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this median age increase. So in 1982, jazz participation, people who participated in jazz performances, who went to jazz performances, if you look at I have these numbers in front of me from the NEA report as well. So jazz, as you said, was the art form that received or that saw the youngest participants, basically.
Median age of 29.
Median age of 29. If you look at the others, they're late 30s, early 40s in 1982. And basically, that young participant quotient kind of evaporated over these periods that you're talking about. Now, I just wanted to point to some other systemic factors that may have played into this. One is, first of all, the median age of Americans in general, went up by 8 years. In 1980, the median age was 30, and right now the median age is 38. So we've gotten older anyway. Another point I wanted to make is that the drinking age change. So you're talking about participants in the age bracket 18 to 24. They, of course, half of them are covered by the age 18 to 21, and the drinking age actually went up in the 80s because of legislation signed by Reagan, partly to combat drunk driving. Now, jazz has been relegated to clubs in American cities, and of course, alcohol.
There's usually a minimum, a two-drink minimum.
Often, yes. Yeah. So the drinking age, I think, probably had something to do with this.
Can you say that again, Terry? We lost you there.
You've just been saying that the number of performance opportunities generally has been going down.
Yes, well,
I think that somewhat reduces the impact of the change in the drinking age.
Well, I'm talking about that. So, what I wanted to look at is the first decade of this survey, from 1982 to 1992, because in that period, the median age for jazz participation went from 29 to 37. Okay, so in fact, the bulk of the increase that you're talking about happened in that decade,
which is the decade when the listeners who were less than 21 could no longer go to these clubs where they were expected to drink.
Okay, so at least
that's the theory.
I would say that took a certain chunk out of, you know, between that and the declining city culture, the sort of demise of club music, of jazz clubs across cities across the U.S. aside from the cities on the coasts. These kinds of things contribute to the overall decline of the health of the jazz infrastructure as we know it.
All right. Here's Dan from New Jersey has a kind of a related question. He wants to know if the fact that people can't smoke in clubs anymore has done something, because You know, we have this kind of, you're laughing, Terry, but it's, you know, it's actually, I mean, if we can talk about the drinking age affecting the median age of the audience, let's talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, people have this image of the smoky bar, you know,
I don't know if that's a factor. But I would say that talking about youth, when you omit half of the youth bracket from club culture, that does have an impact. I think it's fair to at least hypothesize that. You know, we're kicking hypotheses around, you and I, T-Chut. So I want you to understand that, you're hypothesizing that actually jazz is being seen increasingly as a fine art on footing with classical music. And I'm hypothesizing to the that the problem has been not one of accessibility, but one of access. That actually people have fewer and fewer opportunities to get to this music across the United States.
So if you live in New York City, not so much of an issue. If you live in Wheeling, West Virginia, perhaps a very big issue. Is that what
you... Yes. Okay. I mean, I heard, you know, I did this very informal poll this morning on Facebook and Twitter, and of course these are not scientific. And, you know, we are talking about scientific results here. And so, as you said, Mr. T-John, I don't want to... You can't fight statistics with anecdotes. So what I... But I do want to point to a few answers. I asked people, so if you did not attend a jazz concert in the last year, why not? And here are a few answers. One is, of course, my current location, Alabama, makes it difficult for me to make shows that I'm not playing in. Okay, so this is from a musician in Alabama. Another, if I weren't covering a few jazz concerts for a local paper recently, I wouldn't have attended concerts due to the economy. My own busy life, limited venues in the area, not being aware of events.
Access to performance spaces, the economy. I mean, these are things we can continue to talk about. We also want to make room in the conversation for you, our Soundcheck listeners. Tell us what you think. What's the future of jazz looking like to you? Do you go to hear live jazz? If you do, why? And if you don't, we'd especially like to know why not. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or leave a comment, as Dan from New Jersey did, on the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. My guests are Terry Teachout. He's out at sea, but on the line with us anyway. Wrote the article, Can Jazz Be Saved? For the Wall Street Journal. And here in the studio, the New York-based jazz pianist and composer Vijay Iyer, whose music you're hearing in the background, a piece called Historicity. Coming up in a moment, popularizing jazz, are hybrid forms like smooth jazz or jazz fusion the answer? We'll debate that as we continue. And coming up later, Smokey Hormel has played TV and film scores, Western swing music, and now African music. The eclectic guitarist and a sizable band will troop on in here and play some of this music live for us in our Soundcheck studio.
Everybody, welcome to our famous Cotton Club. It's great to see so many friends here tonight enjoying themselves in spite of the cover charge. And if you can spare a minute from your merrymaking, I'd like to have the pleasure of introducing the greatest living master of jungle music, the rip-roaring harmony hound, none other than Duke Ellington. Take your bow, Dukey. First number tonight's going to play a brand new little tune entitled The Cotton Club Stomp. Let her go.
Jungle music? Dookie? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. If you turned on pop radio in the 20s or 30s, that's what you'd hear. Today we're at a point where just 7.8% of adults in this country say that they've attended a jazz performance in the last year. That's down from 10% at the start of the decade. And we're looking at the future of jazz. with Terry Teachout, drama critic of the Wall Street Journal, who writes about jazz and wrote the somewhat controversial article recently called Can Jazz Be Saved? And Vijay Iyer, New York-based jazz pianist and composer, who's here with me in our studio. And the lines are full, so let's go right to the phones. We'll start with Phil in Queens. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how you doing?
What do you think of the future of jazz?
I think it's bright. There are a couple points I wanted to make. One is we need music appreciation classes starting in elementary school like there used to be. I know there's no money for art or music, but there so needs to be. People need to be exposed to everything, and then you will get your 5 or 10% that loves this thing or that. Secondly, I'm on my own mission. I get books and albums for people that I like, my young friends and colleagues and relatives, and you've got to pass it on. You've got to bring young people to jazz concerts and spread the wealth and spread the love. And finally, I think, you know, artists and opera, and I do think of jazz as a fine art now, they need to do outreach. They need to go to school assemblies and throw free concerts all over the city the way Joseph Papp used to come to schoolyards 30, 40 years ago and really spread the joy.
Vijay, do you guys do that?
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time, actually. There's a lot of that going on. I want to just respond to those two things you just said because they're both very excellent points. If you look at the period, again, covered by these surveys, looking from 1982, the beginning of the Reagan era, to 2008, the end of the Bush II era, okay, arts education, music education was defunded in the 80s under Reagan, and also in this decade under Bush, No Child Left Behind, that act actually disincentivized arts education. I had a quote somewhere, but if you look on Wikipedia about No Child Left Behind, you see that because teachers are incentivized to teach to the test, which does not cover arts, they ended up kind of deprioritizing arts teaching in this decade.
So reading, writing, arithmetic at the expense of,
exactly,
of arts education.
I've heard that. That's statistically borne out. I mean, something number like 71% of principals, school principals who were surveyed, attested to this decline or deprioritizing
but
arts education.
Let me just quickly ask Terry, you know, I mean, would music education, you know, do you agree that that could be, you know, one of the root factors at work here?
It's possible. I mean, that early exposure of any form to any art is one of the key factors in becoming interested in it. On the other hand, I doubt if there was all that much jazz music appreciation being taught in elementary and secondary public schools prior to 1982. A certain amount, I don't doubt.
But as long as you're getting some kind of critical listening, you know, yeah, those critical listening faculties are being developed, I think that's the point, isn't
it? Yeah, and particularly teaching people how to play instruments or teaching people getting them in their hands so they can see what it's like to experience that. And that gives people a very different sense of how to listen to music.
All right, back to the phones. Jason joining us from Seattle, Washington. Jason, what's your take on all this?
Hi, thanks for letting me chime in here, and thanks to both Terry and Vijay for their lively discussion. The point I want to make as a jazz musician myself is that, you know, in Terry's initial article and also in the subsequent follow-up on blogs and whatnot on the internet, he seems to, correct me if I'm wrong, but he seems to discount the anecdotal evidence that musicians are putting forth that every night when we play in the clubs and every night when we play in the bars, we get to see firsthand the young audience, the old audience, the audience that is out there. And while the NEA survey is throwing out all of these statistics nationwide, and he seems to be sort of swallowing that hook, line, and sinker, it seems to me that it's not fair to discount the experience of the musicians themselves when each night we get to see the audience firsthand.
Okay,
Terry?
What we just heard is a typical example of what is being written about my piece in the blogosphere. And the answer is yes, I do discount it, because we are talking about a nationwide, statistically representative survey whose metrics have been pointing downward for the last quarter century. This is more important, more significant than any individual person's observation of what he saw in a club last week, especially a big city club. It just is more important. And if you're going to stack up anecdotal evidence, then it has to come from both directions. Yeah. I have gotten a great deal of email from jazz musicians telling me that what they see is what the NEA sees. In any case, I don't go for either one. I go for statistically representative numbers measured at 4 inches over a quarter of a century. That's hard facts.
And Vijay, you didn't come in here to discount the arguments, the statistics either.
I could come up with anecdotes for and against, and I agree with what Mr. Tijau just said, that you can't, like I said, and like we both said, you can't fight statistics from a nationwide survey with anecdotes from any of us. And for every anecdote that we come up with that says, I sold out at the Stone last week and it was packed with people under 30. Robert Glasper was just quoted by Siddhartha Mittler in the Boston Globe saying that the audience for jazz is a bunch of gray-haired white people. So, he didn't say white people, but anyway.
We'll ask him what he said because he's on the show on Monday.
Yeah, but let me say this, though. While we're on the subject of polling and statistics, here's a kind of wild card to throw into the mix here, and this was something that came up during the election last year and was pointed out by Nate Silver on his blog, which perhaps you all know, 538, which is that phone polling, these NEA surveys were done over the phone. Now, phone polling disproportionately leaves out young people who have cell phones. And I don't know, I mean, perhaps, Mr. Tijau, since you were affiliated with the NEA, you have some sense of whether this was taken into
account. Terry, do you have any sense of whether that certainly was something that we heard during the political campaign. I haven't heard anything about it in regards to this NEA survey, have you?
Yeah, no, this is Census Bureau polling. This is not opinion research, Gallup-type polling or phone polling or robot polling.
But it was still done over the phone. They were phone surveys. Isn't that correct? I believe.
This is polling that's done as part of the Census Bureau's work.
Yeah, so a lot of this is done door to door. If there's not the paperwork, they do the door to door follow up. I don't know. That's a good question, though. Something worth checking out. But while we're checking into that, let's go back to the phones. Bruce from New Jersey, joining us. Bruce, are you a jazz consumer?
Hello.
Yes, Bruce. Are you a jazz fan?
Yes, I'm also a musician. Rock, and I've kind of transformed over the years to jazz, and I've noticed a trend of a lot of people. I'm playing in some jazz bands now, and we do a mix. It's not pure jazz, it's we do some Santana, we do rock, but a lot of people come up to us and say, do you guys sing? And if we don't sing, they're not interested. I wonder if that's a trend over the last few decades or something.
So the idea that if you're not singing, then you're a jazz band, is that how people seem to
take? I would say
jazz is more likely to not have singing in it, seems like they're not as interested.
This is actually something that, I wrote about on today's blog is, in the old days when there were record stores, jazz was the bin in which you would find international music, electronic experiments, even the early minimalist recordings. I mean, does some of this have to do with what we call jazz?
It's probably true. But I'd also say that it has a lot to do with the fragility of the infrastructure for jazz across the country. And, as was pointed out earlier, this latest poll was taken during a recession. And I would venture to say that jazz is the most vulnerable art form in the case of a recession because it has the least institutional infrastructure across the board from one city to the next.
That's exactly Terry's point.
It's clear that that's going to impact the numbers. And I'd be interested to see if there might actually be an upturn as the economy gets healthier, assuming it does.
Let's quickly check.
Let me come at this from another angle. I think the fact that jazz has a weak institutional infrastructure, that it's basically made by individuals and bands instead of large ensembles and orchestra-sized groups, makes it more difficult for the music and its musicians to respond to these problems. One of the most controversial things, apparently, I said in my piece was that people who made jazz needed to work on marketing. In fact, it's self-evident. It's exactly what classical music has done.
Well,
but
I guess
it's harder to market when there's just one of you, or four of you, or five of you.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing. Marketing jazz or chamber music, which has a similar kind of problem because it's, you know, not institutionalized a lot. That's a whole other show. But if we try and put a bow on this segment, let's do that with Joel Meyer, our producer, who's been reading the comments, moderating the comments page in the control room. Joel, what's it looking like?
Well, John, Ted in Atlanta has an announcement to make. He says, John, sorry to tell you, jazz is dead. The level of musicianship in younger people interested in creating audio art seems to be going in a different direction, not so conducive to playing jazz. Now you can just do some talking over a beat to prove your attitude, much more important than talent. But Bill from New York disagrees. He says, reports of jazz's demise... are greatly exaggerated. Anybody remember what Frank Zappa said circa 1967? Jazz isn't dead, it just smells bad. And Faith from Rockland County writes this, I think part of the problem is the older jazz community. We're often treated rudely as if we don't deserve good seats, don't get it, and don't belong.
Wow. More anecdotes.
There's more anecdotes, and there's plenty more where that came from on the soundcheck page, WNYC.org. We've been speaking here in the studio with the pianist and composer and arranger, Vijay Iyer, and on the phone with Terry Teachout, who wrote the article that started the whole hullabaloo. It's called Can Jazz Be Saved in the Wall Street Journal. Terry, thanks for taking time out from your cruise there to be with us on Soundcheck today. Enjoy the rest of your journey.
I intend to.
And Vijay, thank you so much for coming back into the studio and joining us this
thanks.
Afternoon.
It was great to talk to you both.
Here's Vijay's version of an MIA song, Galang, to wrap up. Still to come, African guitar pop from the 50s and 60s by way of contemporary guitarist Smokey Hormel. And tomorrow on the show, what happens when otherwise secular artists suddenly make a religious statement in their music? We'll look at examples of the so-called God album from Bob Dylan to Regina Spektor tomorrow on Soundcheck.